The big meeting is set. The decision maker has a need and is expecting an idea or solution from you. But the little voice inside you asks, are they ready to truly listen? Or is this more to substantiate what they've already decided to stay with the bigger, better known option? Competing against industry giants can be difficult, especially if you try to go toe-to-toe with them regarding competency and resources. For every resource or case study you have, they have 10 more. So why play that game? Why not lead with something that builds trust and helps you learn more? Curiosity. On this episode of Breaking Sales, I sit down with Kirsten Markley, a seasoned management consultant who competes with the giants in her space, and we discuss how her curiosity has become a powerful differentiator when dealing with diminished client budgets, centralized decision-making, and extensive competition. In other words, how to compete and win when the pressure's on. So I wanted to do this podcast because I think some of the adjustments, some of the things that you've done to evolve have been fantastic. And I also know from a lot of experience how much courage it takes. I mean, we coach people all across the country, and it takes a ton of courage when you're in the moment and you're heat of the battle and you're thinking, hey, I used to handle this situation this way. I think I'm going to do it this way. Or I used to ask this type of question, but I think I'm going to ask this type of question. And the first time you do it, right, it's like, oh boy, here we go. So, Kirsten, with all that, welcome. I'm glad to have you on the show.
Great to be here. Good to see you.
Good to see you too. So, in management consulting, right, how long have you been in that industry?
16 years.
16 years. Okay. So this will be fun. What are some of the changes that you're seeing maybe over the past five in particular when it comes to, we'll start with how decision makers are making decisions? What are some of the things that you've observed and trends that you've experienced and seen?
Well, the last 5 years have been strange and a lot of disruption. So with the companies that I've been working with, there has historically been a lot of distributed and decentralized decision-making, and specifically around consulting partnerships. And the last three, I would say there has been this kind of constricting centralization of who gets to decide and who says yes to what deal making, a bigger role of procurement in deal shaping and negotiations, and really having to align folks on like what is the number one priority for the partner and for us as an organization. So it's been a little bit of a constricting and a centralization.
How has that impacted those that you work with from a decision-making standpoint? Like, what have you seen some of their processes, or how have you seen those processes or behaviors change?
I think the prioritization or the understanding of the value of work and the value of a partnership has been more important for them to be able to articulate. So where you might want to use your budget to bring in a partner on something that felt critical to you, now it's, is this critical to our enterprise? What's the enterprise value and how could I justify it? So a lot more thinking about, do I need a partner? And maybe it used to be, do I want a partner? And then it's either because this is my priority or tying work to the central enterprise priorities that really like are, you know, must win for organizations.
Yeah, that want versus need, that is interesting. So if you go back 3 to 5 years ago, was it a want? Was it a need? How would you have described it?
Well, Dan, I focus in the consumer and retail industry. And so every industry has seen massive disruption. But I think here with economic downturns and pressures, consumer spend, I think, you know, there have been seasons and many years ago, maybe we're a higher spend season. And now we're seeing there's some hesitancy from consumer wallet share and the global supply chain, that there is increased scrutiny and more, I think, persisting in this industry than I had experienced before.
I know from a little bit of my experience the last 3 years in working in management consulting, budget cuts was it's become a big trend, right? Where someone would have a budget and then that budget would be gone.
Right.
How does that impact the strategy that you have and the strategy that your teams have when it seems like the last couple of years you're always facing, it seems to be like a 3 to a 6 month window where no one has a budget?
I know, and it's really been hard. It's hard to predict and then plan for hiring and thinking about retaining your talent when there's this kind of quick knee-jerk termination of contracts and budget pullback. For us, the strategy is work on the things that are the most critical for the executive leadership team or to activate the strategy of the enterprise. So is this work, do we believe this work is valuable enough that the budget should remain because it's that important to them as a business? So we try to get ourselves positioned and aligned with work that really matters. And that tends to be work that kind of persists through some of those crises.
All right. So my gut is, and we can dive into this a lot, getting work, having access to work that really matters. You have to be able to speak and have conversations at an executive level. Because at the end of the day, there's going to be less budget, and any budget that there is, it's going to be controlled by fewer folks. And so the scrutiny on what's actually agreed upon or worked on intensifies, right?
Absolutely. Yeah.
Talk to me a little bit about that. What's that journey been like? Because again, right, you're having to go upstream, talk to decision makers about lots of details, but also be broad enough and strategic enough where you are able to talk to them about enterprise impact and things like that.
I think there's a couple things the last couple of years that I realize are really valuable for me in those conversations and having audience at an executive level. The first is, you know, understanding the industry. Where is it going? What's the market like? What's the competition doing? Having the macro factors in play and looking at the global economy and all of that. So just to be able to feel like, yeah, there's something going on here that I understand, even outside of them as a company, that is the ecosystem that they exist in. And then the second, being a consultant. So 16 years in consulting, that's a lot of customer problems to solve. It's a lot of different customers. And you have to be pretty curious. One of the reasons I love the consulting industry is because it's constant learning. Like, there is no downtime. New problems, got to learn, got to get ahead. And I have found that my desire and interest in learning plays out in the executive room just as much as it does down, you know, at the floor, walking around with folks who are got their hands in the work, because that curiosity. And I think, you know, in our conversations, understanding objectivity and curiosity are valuable everywhere. And it used to be for me, when I would get to an executive level audience, I would become almost like I needed to position my competence to be in the room, and that I couldn't ask the question because that would reveal that I'm not at their level. You know, I used to really worry about perception in the room. And I have since learned that actually my curiosity is a superpower, and that executives need to be asked hard questions too and actually enjoy it to a certain extent when it's the right question.
I'm so glad you went there. It's so spot on. So I remember, this might have been 2 months ago, right? There was a scenario where you got invited to a very high up executive meeting. And I think it was your team and you were definitely doing your preparation, but the team, no fault of their own, they had that propensity. They were preparing competency. Mm-hmm. And you were like, nah, we're going to do something different here. Can you share a little bit about that? Yeah. Can you share a little bit about that story?
Yeah, I will say getting the opportunity to have that executive level conversation took what you described earlier as courage or boldness. And I had to have that, do I ask for this time, and sit back in that like intention for the meeting and well, what's the worst that could happen? I'm going to ask for the time. And so, yeah, I leaned in and asked the senior executive for a chunk of time to get a better understanding of what was going on in his world. He had asked to see a point of view and maybe a proposal of how we might help him with some objective that he had. And I was, yes, oh, we would love to share our point of view on this initiative you've got going. And about 24 hours later, I realized we just do not know nearly enough to put something in front of him that would be the right thing. There's the chances are so slim. And though we had the time scheduled and we started to prepare a general point of view about what we thought his need might be, I pretty much quickly realized we just need to learn. Like, yes, we probably have a bunch of tools that he could leverage, but we don't know which one. We really don't. And so my team, we prepared a slide deck, as we like to do. That's the world we live in. And then the night before the meeting, which was to be a 2-hour meeting, I had sent a note to the team. I said, you know what? We need to pivot. I know we have a lot to offer and we do have some confidence, but let's start this way. Let's set the intent for the meeting when we get in there. And then let's make sure we're listening for 30 minutes before we pull up a single slide and outline for the team that's going into that meeting with me about 20 preliminary questions on my mind, just to get their juices flowing about, let's just be curious. Let's see which way this goes. And that's the approach we took. We walked into that conversation and we opened up some really thoughtful questions, and this executive leaned in and started responding and taking notes and directing us. You know, he was giving us the cues that gave us an opportunity later on to share a point of view that we knew resonated based on the exploration we got to do with him.
This is the little harder part that's maybe more difficult to explain. What was your mindset like when you were making this decision to lead with curiosity and hold on competency, fully knowing that the decision maker probably expected competency from you and did not expect the curiosity? Did it feel like a risk at first? Did it feel like you were taking a chance? How did you feel prepping? And then how did you feel when you were actually in the conversation, leading with the questions and the curiosity?
It definitely felt like a risk to me, because this executive in some way was saying, I'm expecting you to show me something. And even another friendly, it's like, you should sell, go in there and win something. And I remember thinking, well, that's just not quite right for this. So the risk was too, I don't know this executive well. I don't know hot buttons. I don't know if this is if he leans in and if there's any vulnerability that we could even get there. So it was a risk in knowing he might just be cold and this might fall flat. At the same time, I still knew that just pulling up some slides and sharing a point of view, the chance of that resonating was just, there was just as much risk. Like, that could also easily fall flat. It may not be even close to what he's interested in. So the trade-off is, it was actually at the end of the day, pretty easy for me to make that decision. And plus, you know, you and I have talked at length about, there's many opportunities out there. I don't control the outcome of this conversation. Curiosity is a strength. Why not? You know, what is there to lose? And we want to do it right. And we need to know what's really going on.
I also think for our listeners, your questions, they were the benevolent, right? They were what's in his organization's best interest? What's in his enterprise's best interest, right? So it wasn't like you were walking in asking qualification questions that served you guys. In fact, if I remember correctly, you went in asking some questions that actually required him to think about, should he really do this? Does he really need to go this path? Is there a different option for him? Am I right in remembering that?
You are right, yes. Because the first inclination we had about the work was, ooh, there are a lot of things to think about. There are lenses to apply to that problem. But you don't want to expose somebody as having a weakness in their plan. And, you know, you have to be really careful about that. And you have to have trust to be heard anyway. So that's right.
Yeah. And you guys went in and you guys were asking these questions, not knowing where he was going to take these answers.
That's right.
Yeah, I mean, so it's kind of weird. I mean, on one hand, you've got this fantastic audience with a senior executive who you know can make a decision, and he's interested in potentially utilizing your guys' resources and expertise to get something done, right?
Right, right.
But then on the flip side, you're not sure how he's viewing it. Is he being objective? Is he coming in with biases? And how will he go about assessing the risk and the gain of the decision? Correct?
Right. That's correct.
Right. And so you got these things playing out in front of you. And that's when you guys decided, let's go in. We need to learn more. Let's hold off on competency. Let's hold off on presenting. Let's make sure that we understand that he has thought this through, this angle to this angle to this angle. Then we'll decide if we share.
Right. And even in preparing who should be in the room from my team, it was understanding which way could this go. We maybe had a hypothesis it would go one way, but there were a number of ways. So for us also, it's who needs to be in the room in case it goes left instead of right. What are the potential things? So bringing a multidisciplinary team in there, and we didn't crazy outnumber him. I think there were three of us, but also thinking about what could we bring. And I remember saying to the team, my point of view was, if we get through this meeting and there's no next step, there's no deal, I will feel good knowing we at least were able, even through our curiosity, to help this person think through what really was ahead of them on this mission critical objective. That like benevolence of a real partner, you know, you want to close a deal, but actually you want to help. That's the nature of this work, this consulting worker service work. So, setting some realistic goals for, well, it would be this, but you know, what would feel good is this. So let's just part ways with the outcome of the conversation and let's just have the conversation.
How do you, again, this is one of those ones, right, where not a lot of people think about it, but I do think a lot of high performers are starting to think about it, which is, how do you prep yourself now so that when you go into this type of meeting, you're ready and you're okay when you hear something that traditionally you wouldn't want to have heard, right? Because you're going in now, and you're asking these questions and you don't know where that decision maker is going to take the conversation, but you got to be ready not to get thrown off or label something as good or bad. So how are you doing that now? How do you prep yourself?
And not jump on something that's exciting. You know, that point, if you say something, I think that's really good, and I'm going to dive on that. I mean, history teaches you a lesson too. We've had opportunities where we've been quick to close a deal and then we got burned. We didn't ask the right questions, and that is not fun. So there's a little bit of that, you know, and it is that. That's the mindset. I mean, going in and setting the thought in my mind, and we've talked about this, an activation thought of, this conversation doesn't define my career. This deal won't be the last, and it's not the first. Like the opportunity, really kind of getting some ideas. I owe it to you to be curious, you know, and leave you better off. And those activation thoughts are very helpful. And then I think just being prepared to the best you can. One of the lessons you've taught me too is you do really need to spend time preparing for these conversations. You don't want to just get in a room, kind of shoot from the hip because you've been doing this for 15 years. You won't get the outcome. So actually having that mindset to be able to let go, it causes a lot of preparation for the conversation.
Can you think of a recent conversation where you had to put that to the test, where you asked a question and you did not know what the answer was going to be, but you knew it was a meaningful question that needed to be asked. And then they gave you an answer that you could start to feel yourself label the answer as bad. Have you had one of those scenarios recently where you've had to catch yourself?
Yesterday. Yes.
Is it something you can share a little bit about?
I had a meeting with a different executive yesterday, and first time I'd sat down with this person, trying to get to know her objectives. Same thing. She had asked ahead of the meeting, would I prepare some thoughts on something specific happening out there? And I was thinking, well, nobody cares about your confidence until, you know, you get to a certain point of understanding that. But I had a few questions in mind, and a couple of them I expected to lead us down the path I wanted to go. And it was cold. This question, didn't know the answer to it. That's actually really not in my scope at Summit. So I had to just, this isn't bad. Okay, I don't get to share that confidence that I wanted to share when message I'm hearing, but let's just pivot to some, let's see what is interesting to you. What are you thinking about? And so then allowing that person to lead the conversation instead of trying to drive them somewhere. Yeah.
How did it feel, and how did it end up for you when you had to make that pivot from where you thought the conversation might have went, but it didn't, it went somewhere different?
It felt like it was the right thing for that person. Does that make sense? And it was a little bit of like, let go of control of the outcome and just played your natural strength of curiosity, to your point. So I think the do not label this as bad was important. And don't push any harder, right? But just like follow the cue of the conversation and then find a way to express curiosity in a different direction.
Yeah, definitely. So I'm thinking as a listener, what did you see from people, your decision makers, probably over the past 6 months, right? What did you see from them that told you you were on to something? That you were on to something with this, let me go and lead with listening to learn. Let me lead with my curiosity. I got 16 years of competency. I'll figure out when they share the competency. But when did you start to get the feedback that you were like, huh, this is good. This is meaningful. The connection I'm making with these people is pretty powerful. When did you start to get that kind of feedback? And what was the feedback that you were picking up on?
That's interesting. I was actually just describing to somebody this current process we're in and how it doesn't feel like selling a deal. And now this might be a gross overstatement, but it feels like making a friend. Like it actually feels like we are developing a relationship where you're asking and trusting and listening and responding and sharing more than I might have imagined, and like on your own time and in your own way. So that's been interesting for me to see. Then executives open up, and I mean, this is a small thing, but it's like, we meet early in the morning. Could you meet over a cup of coffee before work starts? Or could you meet in the evening? Could I give you a call? Like small things and big things starting to process, and just finding that folks are seeking some counsel in kind of like a non-8-to-5, non-conventional way. And that just feels real.
So I want to make sure I got that clear. One of the ways that you have been able to pick up that this curiosity, this mindset that you have around learning and asking these more meaningful questions. The first feedback was the investment you could see people making in the conversation.
Yes.
How they were thinking, the pauses they were making, the types of answers you were getting. Is that what you were saying?
Yes. I think that's spot on. That's a better way to say it.
No, that's all right. And then the other way, though, was that they started reaching out to you and they would want to get your thoughts on something early in the morning or late in the evening versus just the typical 9-to-5.
Yeah, it just feels like a different type of relationship, and weighing in on crafting approach, thinking through how to solve a problem before you even think you need a partner to solve it, really. Just, you know, it's the upfront and early influence.
Thanks for listening to Breaking Sales. If you take away one concept from this episode, I hope it's this: when to use curiosity versus competency. We all know competency is easy. It's curiosity that takes courage. When you use curiosity, you don't sound like everybody else, and that is very powerful. Next week, I'll continue my conversation with Kirsten Markley, where we discuss structuring our conversations and how to leverage your mindset, and curiosity.